This is Scripture Read Badly,
a podcast where two grown-up pastors' kids discuss the stories of the Bible in chronological order,
attempting to avoid heresy and generally having a good time.
I'm Jeremy.
And I'm Ryan.
Sit back and rejoice.
Today's verse comes from Ruth chapter 3 verse 7, and when Boaz had eaten and drunk, and his heart was merry, he went to lie down at the end of the heap of grain. Then she came softly and uncovered his feet and lay down. This is the this is proof that in order to get what you want, and especially in order for a woman to effectively propose to a man, which is obviously not very much by the custom of back in the Bible times or today, you must make a man sleep with his feet uncovered and have very cold feet, which usually means that you would run away from something, run away from your problems. So maybe this is God in fact saying women shouldn't propose to men because then men will get cold feet. My name is Ryan, this is Scripture Read Badly.
And this is Jeremy, and I'm also a part of Scripture Read Badly. And that verse is an interesting one because some people argue it meant that she took his pants off too. And classic has, Bible reading.
And did something to his feet.
Yep, definitely yep. Put water on them. Yep. So this is the Book of Ruth, and it is a very interesting book because it doesn't talk super much about the context of it. So we just, what is it? We assume it's part, it's in Judges, and we assume it's, did you come up with a chapter? My Bible has 17:6, Judges chapter 17. But, so it's in the same country next door to the Israelites in Moab. And it's an interesting book that has a few quotes from it that people bandy around, which are pretty fun, which we'll get to very soon. But it opens up within the days when the judges ruled. So the timing is pretty good, within 400 years.
That's right. So Judges 17:6, like you said, is during the story of Micah and the Levite that ministers in his household with his idols. And that's something that we covered a couple of episodes ago. So it's an event that takes place at the end of the book of Judges, but really chronologically at the beginning, kind of to establish that Israel is not doing so well. And during that time, during this time, apparently there was a famine in the land. And so I looked at a timeline that puts the famine between Othniel and Ehud. So Othniel has just died. Or even it kind of overlaps with the end of Othniel's life when Israel is doing fairly well. They have peace for, I think, 40 years or something like that. And during that time, there was a famine and Moab was kind of getting a little bit restless to the east and about to take over, or they had already taken over. What I'm trying to say is there is no exact time, point in time that has been agreed upon by all sources as to when this takes place, but it can be assumed it's roughly around the time of Othniel and before the time of Ehud, because Ehud kind of results in the killing of many, many Moabites. So at this point, there was a famine, and a man of Bethlehem in Judah, we know that city, went to sojourn in the country of Moab. Really?
No, I've read I've read about it before. That's what I meant, in my imagination.
I've heard it was a little town. Was it a little town?
It's okay.
Okay.
It's no Bangkok or Sydney.
Okay, right. So relatively little town of Bethlehem. And this guy, we don't know his name yet. He and his wife and his two sons were going through the country of Moab because there was a famine, so they wanted to get to somewhere where there was not a famine, I guess. The name of the man was Elimelech, or Elimelech, something like that, or Elimelech, Elimelech.
Elimelech?
He was Italian. And the name of his wife was Naomi, or Naomi. And the names of the two sons were Marlon and Chileon. Chileon.
Chileon.
Mm-hmm. And they were Ephrathites. Not sure what that is. From Bethlehem in Judah.
What's an Ephrathite?
I don't know. Could you look that up real quick? Ephrathite.
Yeah, oh, hang on. No, I can't.
Oh, hang on.
Oh, I can look it up on my computer now. I'm at my computer. Okay. Usually I'm not.
It's a clan. It's a clan within the city of Bethlehem.
Oh, okay.
So that's just distinguishing them as a particular family within the tribe. Okay, so they were Ephrathites from Bethlehem in Judah. And they went to the country of Moab, and they lived there. But Elimelech died, and he left Naomi with her two sons, and they both married Moabite women, Moabitesses.
Moabitesses,
and one of them's names was Oprah. And the name of the other one was Ruth.
Ruth.
It was
hey, Ruth.
She's stuck in a root. They lived in Moab for 10 years. So they're both been married for 10 years. Neither of them had any kids, though, which was interesting. The fact that they've been married for 10 years and not had any kids. Yeah, exactly. You don't find many people in today's society, let alone back then, that wait 10 years before they start having kids. But after 10 years, both Marlon and Chileon died. And so then there was Naomi, there was Orpah. it wasn't Oprah. Orpah and Ruth. Just the family of three. And they didn't have any husbands, because all of them had died, which is pretty sad. And this all happened during a famine, as we remember, which is apparently still going on. And Naomi gets up with her daughters-in-law to return from the country of Moab to the land of Israel, for she had heard in the fields of Moab that the Lord had visited his people and given them food. So this could be during the time of Othniel, around the time that they were delivered from the oppression, but it might not be. This could just be a coincidence in timing. Not sure at all, but they get out of Moab. They start heading towards the land of Judah. But what happens next, Jeremy, when they start going in that direction?
Naomi understands to an extent that... when you go cross-cultural, it gets confusing.
Mm-hmm.
So she has these two daughters who are Moabitesses,
mm-hmm.
and they're going back to their age-old enemies.
Mm-hmm.
And she pressures them not to come with her, and it's assumed that it's because she understands that it'll be tough, and that they could find Moabite men and marry them instead.
Yep.
Or at least go back to their parents and be provided for by their parents, even though it's in the middle of a famine.
Yeah.
And so you watch... in fact, she blesses them. She says, "May the Lord deal kindly with you as you've dealt with me and the dead. Mm-hmm. The Lord grant you that you may find rest and a husband."
Mm-hmm.
And she kisses them and they weep. Which shows that there's at least some kind of emotional connection between them. They're not complete strangers.
Yeah.
They've lived together for a while.
It does say that they treated their mother-in-law kindly, so it looks like they're all really close.
Yeah. But the daughters say, "No, we will return with you to your people." And Naomi mm-hmm. presses them even more. "No, turn back, my daughters. Why will you go with me? Have I yet sons in my womb that they may become your husbands?"
Mm.
As in, like...
Gross.
I'm not going to get married again and have babies, and you're going to wait around 18 years so that you can have babies with them, because that'd be weird.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then, "Would you therefore refrain from marrying no my daughters, for it is exceedingly bitter to me for your sake that the hand of the Lord has gone out against me." So she feels, and it continues, she is mourning, and she is very irritated at God that both her sons and her husband were taken away from her, And she mm-hmm. presses that on the daughters, like, hey, this is terrible. Like, you should go because you have a better hope in life than me.
Yeah.
And then Oprah is like, all right, I'm out. And she leaves.
But not without weeping. I think that's to her credit. It seems that she's parting in grief, which is good. I feel like it often gets brushed over, the fact that she's just like, yep, nah. Because of the fact that Ruth stays with Naomi.
And becomes a part of the line of Jesus.
Yes.
Kind of overshadows Oprah's weeping.
That's right.
But so she weeps and leaves. Mm-hmm. And Ruth stays. And we get to the huge quote that is in songs and in poems and in sermons. But before that, Naomi once again see your sister-in-law. What?
The quote that's in songs and poems and stuff is don't stop believing, isn't it? Stop
believing. Whoa, probably. See your sister-in-law has gone back to her people and to her gods. Return after your sister-in-law. But Ruth says, don't urge me to leave you. I will go where you go. I will lodge where you lodge. Your people mm-hmm. will be my people, your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. May the Lord do so to me and more also, if anything but death parts me from you. Mm-hmm. And so it's ridiculously deep. It's almost a covenant between these two ladies.
Yeah.
Said by a daughter-in-law who's never been to this other country. But at least trusts her mother-in-law enough and loves her mother-in-law enough that she's determined to go with her.
Mm-hmm.
And so Naomi sees that she's being stubborn and will not leave and has covenanted herself almost. So she's like, all right, let's go.
Yep.
And what happens next?
Well, they go to Bethlehem. They go back to the little town of Bethlehem. And when they go to Bethlehem, the whole town is stirred because of them. And what's interesting is that the significance of the meanings of names comes into play next. And so they say, is this Naomi? They don't even recognize her because of the change that has come over her in the last 10 years. And so it could be assumed that maybe when she left, she looked different. She probably looked happy. She probably looked more like her name's meaning, which means pleasantness. Mm-hmm. And she had a family, she had hopes, she had dreams. Yes, there was a famine, but she was determined and was seemingly optimistic. And so now they say, is this really the same woman? It's like they don't even recognize this person that has come back with no family, with no hopes, with no dreams or aspirations, and with... we can assume even less food than when she left, because now the fact that she's come back to Israel is due to there being food now. So it looks like she's left Moab because there's still there'll be more food in Israel. So she hasn't been doing that well for the last 10 years. And she says, don't call me Naomi. Don't call me pleasantness. Instead, call me Mara, because God has dealt bitterly with me, and it means bitter. So she's saying, I'm a different person to who I was. I'm just the shadow of myself. I'm in some ways even the opposite of who I once was. I went away full and the Lord has brought me back empty. Why call me pleasantness when the Lord has testified against me and the Almighty has brought calamity upon me? And so Naomi comes back to Bethlehem and says she returns, but it seems though that means she goes back to live there. And Ruth, the Moabite, her daughter-in-law, with her, who returned from the country of Moab, they came to Bethlehem at the beginning of the barley harvest. So they can get some sweet barley sugars.
Barley sugars.
Them. Mm-hmm. Used to suck on them during the 40-hour famine because...
I remember that.
Because kids were advised to do that so they didn't have low blood sugar and faint.
Do people still do that? Fun.
I think the 40-hour famine is still going. If somebody out there knows, let us know. That'd be great. If you're doing the 40-hour famine, send us some barley sugars. We will look into supporting you, because it's a worthwhile cause. Maybe we can dip into the Patreon. Yeah. But no promises.
No promises. And then...
All right.
The next chapter two, is titled, Ruth Meets Boaz, which is the best part of the romantic story.
And Act so we find two of a romantic comedy? Or the end of Act 1?
The end of Act 1, the start of the tension.
Yep.
Now, Naomi had a relative of her husband's, a worthy man of the clan of Elimelech, whose name was Boaz. And Ruth said to Naomi, "Let me go to the field and glean among the ears of grain after him in whose sight I shall find favor." And this refers to the practice that God put in place, that when you harvest a field, you don't harvest every single piece. You leave some behind, because then if anyone are struggling to have ends meet or need to find food, they can come and work to harvest the rest of it, the gleanings.
Yeah.
Which is such a cool principle, because then it's not a handout per se, because they still have to work for it. But it gives a chance to the people to be able to eat. And so that's what Ruth plans to do. She says, "You stay home and I'll go and glean, and maybe we'll find favor in this man's sight." And Naomi says, "Go, my daughter." So she set out after the reapers, and she happened to come to the part of the field belonging to Boaz, this relation of theirs. And behold, Boaz came from Bethlehem, and he said to the reapers, "The Lord be with you." And they answered, "The Lord bless you." And I think this is reported on because to show the goodness of the heart of Boaz.
Right.
As a God-fearing man, which comes into place later in the story, but it shows you that he adheres to the gleaning laws, he treats his workers with respect, and this could bode well for Ruth.
Yeah.
Then Boaz... And
during this time, there were people that were turning away from God. If this was during the peace, then we can assume it wasn't too long before people did turn away. Or if it was during the oppression of the Moabites, then we can assume that most of Israel had turned their back on God. So this is, like you said, showing that Boaz is remaining steadfast. And I think that is potentially why God chooses this line. Maybe?
Yep. I totally agree.
Mm-hmm.
But then you wonder how Ruth knew of this law, and if it was a principle in Moab as well because of the influence of Israel, or because Naomi told her the principles of God as she was growing up. But well, she does. She goes out and finds this place.
I can imagine that Naomi would have said, "We don't have husbands who can work for us, so the only way we can get things is to do what the widows do, which is to glean." So she would have been familiar with her culture's practices, and whether it was like that with Ruth back in Moab or not, Ruth would have potentially even asked Naomi what widows do in Bethlehem to get by.
Yeah.
So.
Widows Bethlehem.
Now, we can guess that Ruth is roughly about 25, maybe 30, because if, as was the custom, if they were to get married in their teenage years, if Ruth got married at 15, then 10 years later, when her husband died, she would have been 25. And, but if she was married a little bit later, 30. So the fact that a servant who was in charge of of Boaz's field answers Boaz by saying she is a young Moabite woman who has come back with Naomi from the country of Moab. Boaz obviously has an interest in Ruth. He likes what he sees, but he also wants to know, because he says, "Whose young woman is this?" Maybe that's his way of saying, "Is she married? Whose family does she belong to? Is she a widow? Is she a bachelorette? Is she available? Because who knows? Maybe poor people that were begging and things sent their wives into the fields to glean as well. Or not sure.
True. Not sure.
Mm. Not sure.
Mm.
Okay, then... so she's a young Moabite woman, and Ruth says, please let me glean and gather among the sheaves after the reapers. So she came and she continued from early morning until now, except for a short rest. So it's this servant is saying to Boaz, she's a hard worker and she's dedicated. And then what is Boaz's impression of Ruth?
He seems to want to help her. And I don't know if that's because he knows who she's related to or because he's impressed by her work ethic.
Mm-hmm.
But he invites her, don't go to glean in any other field or leave this one, but keep close to my young women. Let your eyes be on the field that they are reaping and go after them. Have I not charged the young men not to touch you? And when you are thirsty, go to the vessels and drink what the young men have drawn. So he sets it up so that he can... bless her more if he wants, which he does later, but also is very hospitable with making her feel safe and making her able to drink water when she needs. And then she is shocked. She falls She's on the ground, bowing to the ground, and says, why have I found favor in your eyes that you should take notice of me since I am a foreigner? And Boaz says back, all you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband has been fully told to me. So he does know her situation and how you have left your father and mother and your native land and came to a place you did not know before. And then he says, a blessing, the Lord repay you for what you have done, and a full reward be given you by the Lord, the God of Israel, whose wings you have now, who you have come to take refuge. And so he knows her situation and he wants to bless her. Because she has blessed her mother-in-law and she has left her homeland and done quite a brave thing. And then she says, I have found favor in your eyes, my lord, for you have comforted me and spoken kindly, though I am not one of your servants. Like, she's a complete stranger.
Yeah. I think we can assume that Boaz was, at the very least, acquainted, and I would venture to say quite close, with Elimelech. Who was Naomi's husband, judging by the fact that they were related, they were from the same clan in the same little town of Bethlehem. So I'm guessing that he would have maybe been a cousin of Elimelech, and when he heard that Elimelech had died and so had his sons, he would have gone, oh, that's terrible, I wonder what's happened to Naomi. And then when Naomi comes back and he sees that Ruth is taking care of her, then he might even see it as doing his family a personal favor. So he's wanting to reward her for being so kind to his clan, even though Naomi, now that Elimelech has died, is no longer by blood related to the rest of the clan.
Yeah.
So... He's trying to pay it forward and see that she is blessed in return for upholding his clan, his family.
Yeah.
Even his extended family. So he's looking out for her because she's looked out for him, even though she hadn't known him up to this point. At one mealtime, Boaz says, come, eat some bread and dip your morsel in the wine. That sounds like communion, doesn't it? Yeah. Some conservative churches... Oh, isn't that the worst, though, when you get breadcrumbs all through the goblet of wine and then you have to... you try and not get breadcrumbs from other people's bread on your noobs. Bread.
And, yeah. Communion noobs.
Yeah, you and I, we've had our fair dip at the goblet over time.
Oh, definitely dipped. I'm more a dipper than a sipper. And I didn't know that at the last church I came to. So I was like, I don't know what to do. I need an adult.
Yeah, one of the spoils of being a pastor's kid. So she sits beside the reapers, who seem to be the paid workers, the ones that are held in high esteem by Boaz. And he passes her roasted grain. Now, this is stuff that the widows and other gleaners are not usually able to get. They usually pick up the things that have been left behind or have fallen from the bundles that people are reaping. So she gets some of the choice grain, which, like I said, is unheard of for somebody of her position, let alone a foreigner. So she's seeing a lot of favor. And when she goes to glean, he says, let her glean even among the sheaves. So that's not just behind people that have picked it, but before people have picked it. And don't reproach her. And so he's finding more and more ways to bless her. And she's finding more and more favor in his sight. And why do you think that is?
Because he wants to retain her dignity by not just handing her stuff. And that she gets to work for it. But I assume he also wants to make sure that she's well taken care of, because he knows she's collecting for not just himself. I mean, herself. She's collecting for her mother-in-law as well.
Yep. Yep, that's right. So Boaz is also helping Naomi retain her dignity, even though she's wanting to be called Mara and all that. But Ruth gets to take home so much barley. It's like the amount that a normal paid worker would get, not just a gleaner. And they have heaps left over barley. after they've eaten everything they want. And Naomi's just going, who did you work for? Yeah. Whoever it is, bless his cotton socks, which apparently he's not wearing later on.
Nope.
Because Ruth takes them off. So then Ruth says, his name is Boaz. And Naomi says, that is a relative of ours, one of our redeemers, somebody who can essentially make sure that we can be taken care of for the rest of our lives and all that type of thing. So it's like being grafted into somebody else's family. Like somebody says, I'm going to support you. I'm going to cover all the costs of this and that, so that you can have your dignity, so that you can live a normal life and you don't have to rely on welfare or anything else. So that's kind of the role of the kinsman redeemer. And so that's the role he has because they're of the same clan. So that's pretty significant and kind of lucky that Ruth picked his field right away. But as with most rom-coms, it leads to the magic happening over time. So
the magic sweet makeouts. That's what's going to happen soon.
Yes.
So she keeps gleaning. They keep getting to know each other. And have you
montage?
A sweet montage.
Sweet montage.
Dun, 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 and then she's like running and like picking up the sheaves, and there's like love hearts.
Yeah.
I think it's
because I like movies like You've Got Mail and When Harry Met Sally and stuff, but I'm just picturing some kind of jazzy number, jazz piano with a crooning voice happening while this montage is taking place.
You gotta montage it.
The more jazz piano, the better.
So good jazz piano. And maybe she's made some friends whilst gleaning, and she starts whispering about how cute Boaz is, and Boaz has no idea because she's a baby to him.
Yeah, because Boaz is, as, let's assume, the age of her father-in-law.
Yeah.
Who?
Most definitely.
Yeah, it was probably okay. If her father-in-law, if Elimelech got married at the age, this is a little bit of maths right now. If Elimelech got married at the age of 25. To Naomi, who was 10 years his junior, then, and both his sons got married roughly around 20, 25, then he would have been 45 at the time that Naomi's that the two daughter-in-laws married, daughters-in-law married his sons. So then this is 10 years later. So he could be 55 at this point, and Ruth might only be 25. So you're right.
Yeah, that's all. He
probably
old.
Sees her as a bit of a baby.
Super baby!
Super baby. Yep.
So she has to make a big splash. She has to get his attention.
Mm-hmm.
And she does so in chapter 3.
Ooh. Does she now? And what?
It's funny because she starts the process with talking to Naomi. No, mm-hmm. Naomi talks to Ruth. My daughter, should I not seek rest for you that it may be well with you? Like, can I find you a husband so that everything's sweet and then you don't have to worry about life anymore?
Matchmaker, yeah, make me a
exactly,
match.
Exactly, totally. Find is me not Boaz fight. Our relative with catch whose young women catch. You were? See, mm-hmm. he is winnowing barley tonight at the threshing floor. Mm. Wash, therefore, and anoint yourself and ooh. Put on your cloak and go down to the threshing floor. But do not make yourselves known to the man until he has finished eating and drinking. But when he lies down, observe it, then go and uncover his feet, ooh, in quotation marks, and lie sucks. Down, and he will tell you what to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is very much...
she's
like,
saying,
Naomi knows the legal possibilities that mm-hmm. he can redeem her.
Yep.
And he's a pretty good man, and he's pretty old, and he's pretty rich. So maybe he'll do that.
Yep.
And she probably knows all the possible women that he could do that with.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, Ruth is a top choice for it.
Yep.
And so...
she does
she
it
goes
all.
Down. He's tired. He's had a few wines. He's eaten some good breads.
Yeah. He's and winnowed. Then he's thoroughly winnowed.
He has thoroughly winnowed. And then she goes and uncovers his feet, which in some cultures, he wouldn't have gone to bed with anything on his feet, which is weird. So is it that she just rolled the blanket up so that his feet were uncovered, which is just so weird. And then she lay next to his feet. So it was like an act of subservience. Like, I want you to be my husband. I want you to be my redeemer.
Mm-hmm.
Or... did she take his pants off and something interesting happened, which would start the marriage process anyway?
Okay. Well, the ESV has something to say about that.
It yes, says, please.
Uncovering someone's feet and lying down next to them is seen as a bold marriage proposal.
Okay.
The speculation that there is something sexual in nature about it, that it's a euphemism, has no evidence. And it would be, it says, it would be out of place in this story, which I think is true.
Okay.
But it doesn't seem like he was asleep. Does it say that he was asleep?
No, he just lay down to sleep.
Hmm.
So maybe he is.
Mm-hmm. He was definitely going asleep with a full belly and maybe a bit of a groggy head from drinking.
And a satisfied belly from all the breads.
Mm-hmm. So much bread. But apparently it was dark because he goes, who are you?
Who is this?
And she said, I am Ruth, your servant. Spread your wings over your servant. He has wings?
Oh, yeah.
What?
He's a dragon wizardy mutant.
Yeah. Okay. He's a dragon wizardy mutant. For you are a redeemer. My redeemer lives. C7A7.
There you go.
And he says, may you be blessed. You have made this last kindness greater than the first, in that you have not gone after younger men, whether poor or rich. So he's saying, I haven't had a lot of luck romantically, romantic styles, and I'm not... I'm kind of a little bit surprised that you went for somebody... with the salt and pepper going on, but I am
pepper.
Blessed because you have proposed that. And then he says, yeah, I'll follow through with it. We can get married. You are a worthy woman.
And you too will have wings one day. We'll stitch you some. And then we'll have dragon babies.
Jeremy, I think what you're misunderstanding is that she is the wind. And so when she says, spread your wings over me, she is the wind beneath his wings.
Oh, that's what we're looking at. He's here. Not a freak.
No, no, that's right. So he says, yep, I can redeem you. Stay here and I'll redeem you. But he does say something interesting when chapter 4 comes around, that there's somebody closer that could redeem. So maybe he's a second cousin of Elimelech, and there's a first cousin or something like that, or maybe a brother.
Oh, yep.
That could have done so. But he does say, as the Lord lives, so he's making a solemn promise, I will redeem you. Lie down until the morning. So he's also saying, you can sleep here at my feet, assuming it's not a euphemism. No. So she...
That's just, he knows. He knows the people need to sleep.
Mm-hmm. And he's taken off his shoes, so let's hope they didn't smell too bad. But Ruth gets up before anybody can recognize anyone else, which is an interesting thing to say, I guess, because it's still dark. Maybe they're a little bit hungover. But she does also want to get out so that there are no rumors circulating that anything did happen between them.
So honorable.
Yeah. Very, very good. So then he gets ready. He gives her more. He gives her more stuff and then goes out to the gate, which is where a lot of the commerce and politics and things took place in the town, in that little town of Bethlehem. And the Redeemer of whom Boaz had spoken came by. And Boaz says, look, man. Naomi has come back from the country of Moab and is selling the parcel of land that belonged to our relative Elimelech. So I thought I would tell you of it and say, buy it in the presence of those sitting here and in the presence of the elders of my people. If you will redeem it, redeem it. But if you will not, tell me that I may know, for there is no one besides you to redeem it, and I come after you. So he's saying, you got the first choice because that's the way things are supposed to work. You can go ahead and have it. But if you don't, it's mine. I'm putting in second bid for sure.
Second bid.
Yeah. And then the guy says, I will redeem it. And Boaz says, the day you buy the field from the hand of Naomi, you also acquire Ruth the Moabite, the widow of the dead, in order to perpetuate the name of the dead in his inheritance. So that's fair. He's saying that comes with the territory, literally. But he's also saying, I feel like he's putting it fairly morbidly.
Yeah.
By saying, you inherit the widow of the dead. And you have to inherit the dead.
All of her problems. In his
inheritance.
She's a crack addict. Mm-hmm. Do you want that?
Yeah. But then he says, all right, if that's the case, I can't redeem it because I might impair my own inheritance. Maybe he was a little bit more strict with who he let into his family and he didn't want a foreigner, or maybe it was the fact that he was already married and he didn't want to take another wife. Or something like that. Take my right of the redemption yourself, for I cannot redeem it. And then Boaz, I imagine, jumped in the air and clicked his heels because he was so happy. Oh, yeah.
That was the end of the second montage.
Yes, yes, that's Bam. Right. And now, it was the custom in former times in Israel concerning redeeming and exchanging to confirm a transaction. The one drew off his sandal and gave it to the other, and this was the manner of attesting in Israel. So when the Redeemer said to Boaz, buy it for yourself, he drew off his sandal. Then Boaz said to the elders of all the people, so he's just holding his thong in the air, and he says, you are witnesses this day that I have bought from the land, from the hand of Naomi, all that belonged to Elimelech, and all that belonged to Chilion and to Mahlon. Also, ooh, hello, Ruth the Moabite. That sounds fairly tasty, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. I'll take a chili in, thanks.
But not fry. A marlin. You can keep that.
No. Marlin's a type of fish. And he's saying, and I also acquire Ruth the Moabitess, the widow of Mahlon. I have bought her to be my wife, to perpetuate the name of the dead in his inheritance, that the name of the dead may not be cut off from among his brothers and from the gate of his native place. You are witnesses this day. So he's saying all this, a solemn vow with his sandal held up in the air. So they're saying, all right, man, that's fine. Probably getting a really dirty foot. Then all the people who were at the gate of the elders said, we are witnesses. May the Lord make the woman who is coming into your house like Rachel and Leah, who together built up the house of Israel.
The woman!
A woman, yes. So, yeah, pretty interesting. He is... Wow, alright. Very curious. Okay, so then they also bless him, saying, and may your house be like the house of Perez, whom Tamar bore to Judah, because of the offspring that the Lord will give you by this young woman. Now, will you remember that Judah and Tamar, back in Genesis, there was a... Tamar was his daughter-in-law, I think, who tricked him by disguising as a prostitute, with her, and then she had a baby, and it was Perez, which is a very Spanish-sounding name, but nonetheless. And Perez became the... I'm not sure, the heir to Judah's estate, even though Judah had other sons, and it just got a little bit convoluted and weird, but I remember that there was a blessing on Perez, but it was a very strange way to have an offspring. So they're saying essentially, may you have children like Perez, who is blessed by God despite the circumstances by which
being a freak
you're acquiring back. this wife. Yeah. So then, that's Jeremy, cool. Take us through the last part of this book.
And then they get married. And they dun, do it and have dun, a baby. Dun, 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 and dun,
they do what?
They have the seps.
Which is in the seps.
Verse 13. And the Lord gave her conception, which is a polite way of saying they did it. And she bore a son, which took 9 months. So that sentence is very long.
Yeah.
And then in 14, blessed be the Lord. The women said to Naomi, blessed be the Lord who has not left you this day without a redeemer, and may his name be renowned in Israel. So they refer back to the time that she was like, I'm sad and bitter and God is the worst. And they're like, no, God came through and gave you everything you really wanted.
And she's pleasant again. She is pleasant.
She is pleasant. Then Naomi took the child and laid him on her lap and became his nurse. And the woman of the neighborhood gave him a name, saying, a son has been born to Naomi. They named him Obed, and he was the father of Jesse, the father of David. And then it shows the genealogy through Ruth to... Oh, no, it doesn't go all the way to Jesus. But we know that David is in the line of Jesus. And so... Mm-hmm. Yeah, not only is this an outsider, like a non-Jew at the time...
Mm-hmm.
She is grafted into the family that births the Son of God, who then grafts us into the family of eternity, giving us life forever.
Mm-hmm.
Boom! And Ruth!
That's awesome. And what's cool about this, too, is that Salmon is listed in the genealogy as a direct descendant from Perez, who we know is the offspring of Judah. And Salmon married Rahab. So Boaz is actually the son of Rahab. And maybe...
Salmon.
Yep, maybe that could be part of the reason why he had difficulty finding a wife. Maybe people
because his dad was down a fish? On him.
Because his dad was a fish and his mother was a harlot. Yeah, exactly. So that could have been fish it. Maybe, boy. Maybe he grew up with some stigma. People thought, he's the son of a Gentile and a prostitute, no less. So that's, we're not going to let our daughters marry into that line. But here we have Ruth.
Look at his weird feet.
Yeah. He's got fins and gills. What is wrong? And he's a strange pink color.
Yeah, that's gross.
Yes. But it turns out, I wonder if Rahab would have still been alive. Boaz would have been 50. So maybe she would have been dead by then. But if not, then Ruth would have been the living daughter-in-law of Rahab. So
Rahab, living daughter.
That's pretty cool. And as we can obviously see, Obed's the father of Jesse, Jesse the father of David. So Ruth is the great-grandmother of King David, who is a descendant of Jesus. And so Ruth and Rahab are both in the line, which is pretty awesome.
I also agree.
Very, very cool. All right, well, this has been the Book of Ruth, which we're inserting right before the story of Ehud, which is sure to be a fun episode. And we know that it is, because we recorded it prior to this one. Now, if we did get the timeline wrong, forgive us, but like with the Book of Job, that we put a few episodes into Genesis, there's no real lockdown consensus for what part of the Book of Judges this kind of takes place during, so we're just putting it here.
And it's kind of irrelevant, because
it is kind of irrelevant.
The purpose of these books are not to get the dating right.
Mm-hmm. However,
it's to show that God is pretty cool.
Boaz and Ruth got the dating right. Am I right? Am I right?
Oh, conception!
All right, well, some advice is that when the Lord gives you conception, it is a blessing, and and you'll bear a son. Yep.
Or a daughter, if that's what you're into.
I guess so, yeah. I mean,
this has been Scripture Read Badly. We're on all of the social medias. Mm-hmm. You can meet us in person in Queensland or Lithuania.
Yep.
Read your Bibles. They're pretty entertaining. Pray we started every day. A study on the Book of Joel yesterday, and it was so good. We had pizza.
Ooh.
So you should do that. Pizza in the Bible. It's fun. Mm. You get to argue.
Mm.
All right. See ya.
All right. Blessings, everybody. Blessings. May God give all of you conception at some point, if that's what he wants for you.
Even the men who have two uteruses.
It'd be like an Arnold Schwarzenegger movie. Mr. Mm-hmm. Mum? Is that what that was called?
I don't know. Junior.
Junior, yeah. All right, whatever. Bye!